concern, although probably, sadly, accurate.
What's going on?
Nothing much, Cole said at the same time Gwenda said, Your creepy lizard friend was giving us a creepy lizard warning. Tamara folded her arms and gave Cole a stern look. He did say something about automatones crying out or something, he admitted. But I told him he had to be wrong because automatones is in chaos. Aaron sent him there when we were looking for my dad. I sure did. Aaron sounded pleased. Cole turned to gesture toward Warren, but the little elemental was gone. Cole threw up his hands in frustration. Oh, come on! Warren! Get back here! So this is how it happens with you guys? Gwenda demanded. Some weird lizard shows up and all of a sudden everything goes sideways and you're fighting a massive elemental or some chaos-ridden army or whatever? Well, let me tell you, I am not in for any of that.
No one's asking for your help, Cole said grumpily, picking up his ball of aluminum.
That is kind of how it happens, though, Aaron said. Just then, there was a ringing noise, like a distant bell, followed by Master Milagros's voice calling them back. They'd barely gotten to do any poking around. Cole couldn't believe the exercise was already over.
Did either of you find anything? He asked.
Tamara shook her head.
I don't think there's any silver in these tunnels.
Gwenda looked a little smug.
I found a vein of tungsten back in the other room and marked it down. I ran into you when I started looking for a second one.
They squeezed through the tunnel to find Kai and Jasper, excitedly marking their finds on a map. Cole noticed that he was the only one who had an actual sample of the metal, though. He hoped that was a good thing. But when he showed Master Rufus, he looked over the aluminum ball in a puzzled manner. Both Melinda and Cindy had found impressive amounts of their metals embedded in the walls. Celia's team had obviously won, although neither of the masters made a big deal about it.
Now that you've found so much metal in the magisterium, tomorrow we will go to the library and discover the properties of each,
Master Milagros announced.
What kinds of magic do each of the metals lend themselves to, and how would you fashion a weapon from what you've found today? We want to see your designs and ideas.
Celia, clearly expecting a prize instead of another assignment, gave a heavy sigh. Master Milagros continued,
There's something else we are going to do today. Something done very seldom, but which is not without precedent. Master Rufus and I have been discussing what would be most helpful to your learning, and it's been decided that Gwenda and Jasper will become Master Rufus's apprentices, and I will take on some of the orphaned apprentices from masters who were lost in the recent battle. Right now, everyone is a little overloaded, and this is a way to help.
More Jasper? Why does the universe hate me? Cole thought. Tamara folded her arms over her chest. Cole wasn't sure what it meant, but at least she wasn't jumping up and down for joy. Celia, however, appeared to be fuming. She must be upset enough at having her boyfriend moved to another apprentice group, no less one with the enemy of death in it. This wasn't going to make things better between her and Cole.
Jasper hasn't made it much of a secret that he wanted to be Master Rufus's apprentice from the beginning, Gwenda said. But why me?
Don't you remember? Master Milagros said. You asked to be reassigned.
For a moment, Gwenda looked as though she was going to choke, and Cole abruptly recalled how she had come to their rooms a long time back to complain about Jasper and Celia making out, how she'd asked if they could persuade Master Rufus to take her on as an apprentice. Apparently, they weren't the only ones she'd discussed it with.
But that was Bronze Year, and I definitely didn't want to move in with Jasper,
Gwenda said, which so perfectly summed up Cole's feelings that he couldn't help thinking it might be fun to have her as a roommate after all. But no matter how much he liked them, having new apprentices in his group was going to be weird. It had always been him and Tamara and Aaron, and even if Tamara didn't know it, it still was. Besides, he had important stuff to work out with Tamara. How was he going to win her back with Jasper around all the time? How were they going to find time to talk?
How are you going to figure out a way to tell her about me?
Aaron asked. And there was something in that thought that made Cole remember how, to Aaron, this might feel like being replaced.
Jasper and Gwenda, you're going to move into Tamara and Cole's room, so pack up your things and we will re-enchant your wristbands, said Master Rufus. Tonight, I will meet with you privately to determine your strengths and weaknesses.
Jasper nodded, looking shocked. He'd spent his iron year trying to get into Master Rufus's apprentice group. Master Rufus was the most famous of the mage teachers and had an eye for picking apprentices who would go on to do important things, for good or for ill. He'd taught Constantine Madden, but he'd also taught prominent members of the Assembly and mages at the Collegium. Now Jasper was finally getting his chance. Cole wondered if it was still something he wanted.
Okay, Jasper said slowly, as though he was still trying to process what was happening.
Gwenda towed him away to pack. Celia went over to Master Milagros, probably to complain. Cole decided he better go back to the room and make sure Havoc was on his best behavior for the move. Tamara fell into step with him.
So, she said, what do you think of Warren's warning?
With everything going on then, it was the last thing that Cole expected her to say. But Tamara was a person who seldom let herself be distracted from what was important.
Could automatones have really escaped the void?
Cole asked, although he didn't really expect an answer.
No, said Aaron, not possible.
I don't know, Tamara said. But we could go to the library tonight to research. Maybe there was another elemental like Automatones.
Like his cousin? Cole asked.
And you think that maybe Warren's friends mistook them because Automatones is the famous one?
Tamara gave him an annoyed look.
Sure, she said. Automatones is in all the elemental celebrity magazines.
Aaron chortled. That was pretty good.
Oh, shut up,
Cole thought, homing in on something he realized had almost passed him by.
We're going to the library tonight? Is this like a date? A study date?
Tamara nodded. I think we better check this out just to be sure. Warren's annoying, but he's been right before.
She put her hand to her chin. We're going to need help. Going through all those books.
Jasper might do it. He's our new roommate now, after all.
So not a date, then,
Cole realized. Aaron sang, I've got a lovely bunch of coconuts in his head all the way through the corridors of the cave, just to cheer him up.
Chapter 5 The move didn't take too long. Gwenda did like dogs, and to both Tamara and Cole's surprise, Jasper and Gwenda agreed to accompany them to the library that night before they went to meet with Master Rufus. Gwenda seemed curious, and Jasper... Well, Cole wasn't sure why Jasper did anything. Jasper watched Celia stride off to the gallery with half the other Goldier students with a forlorn look on his face, then squared his shoulders and followed Cole and Tamara to the library. The library was one of Cole's favorite places in the Magisterium, not because he was particularly bookish, but because he'd spent a lot of good times there with Tamara and Aaron. Now, he, Tamara, Gwenda, and Jasper trooped in under the inscription that read, "Knowledge is free and subject to no rule," and sat down at one of the long wooden tables in the center of the room.
"Okay," Tamara said, taking charge. "Here's what we're looking for. Stuff about automatones. Are there other elementals like him? And chaos. Has anything ever come back from chaos? Do we know anything about the chaos realm?"
"Don't you?" Gwenda said, eyeing Cole. "I mean, you're the chaos mage."
He shook his head.
"No. No idea. I can send things through to chaos, but I don't have any idea what's on the other side."
They all split up and took different sections of the library. Cole ended up in the chaos magic section, where there were a lot of books he guiltily realized he should probably have read already, books on the history of chaos mages, the meaning of counterweights, and the discovery of chaos magic. He was reaching for a book called Soul and Void, Preliminary Theory, when Aaron spoke.
"I need a body," he said. "I can't stay in your head forever."
Cole slumped against the bookshelves. He'd known this was coming, and it would be a relief to be alone in his own head, but it still felt a little rejecting. Plus, he had no idea how to accomplish it.
"It's not that easy to just get a body," he murmured. "Maybe someone dead?"
"We can't use a corpse. That's what happened to you last time. You got weird in there because the brain had been dead, and that was pushing your soul back into you. Imagine how it would be with some random other dead body." He paused. "And not a baby. That's what happened with me. You'd lose all your memories. You'd be a different person. A really little, helpless person."
"I don't want to be a baby."
Aaron sounded appalled. "And I definitely don't want to push out the soul of a baby."
"We could go to the hospital," Cole said, realizing how morbid the whole conversation was.
"Find someone who's about to die? Wouldn't I just jump into their body and then die?"
"We could fix them with magic," Cole suggested, though he knew this was unrealistic. Neither of them knew that much about healing magic.
"Then we should probably patch them up and let them live,"
Aaron said with the annoying nobility that told Cole that this Aaron was okay. He was alive now and not a scary undead monster, and there was a big part of Cole that wanted to quit while they were ahead. Even if it meant Aaron lived in his skull forever.
"If you keep shooting down all my suggestions, you're going to be stuck here," Cole reminded him.
From behind a nearby bookcase, he heard someone giggling. He peered around, worrying that someone had heard him talking to himself. Instead, he saw Tamara sitting on the table, swinging her legs, with Jasper beside her, apparently saying something amusing. Cole narrowed his eyes.
"We'll think of something."
Aaron sounded desperate.
"We could kill someone," thought Cole, eyes narrowing further as he watched Tamara giggle again and Jasper preen.
He was definitely flirting.
"We could kill Jasper, for instance."
"We're not going to kill Jasper. I don't want to be a murderer."
"You killed Master Joseph," Cole thought, and then was surprised at himself.
He wouldn't have said that to Aaron out loud. He hadn't wanted to mention anything that had happened during that horrible time, but he couldn't seem to stop thinking,
"You practically pulled off his head like a tomato.
I wasn't myself.
Aaron protested. Cole didn't say anything. He heard Tamara giggle again, but didn't have the heart to look. He didn't have any claim on her. She could go out with Jasper if she wanted, even if the thought made Cole want to smash his own head against a stalactite. There was no point being angry at Aaron, either. None of this was Aaron's fault. It was Master Joseph's fault, Alex Strike's fault, Constantine Madden's fault. And Cole's own fault.
I guess jumping from one body to another is always going to be murder,
Aaron thought somberly.
You're always killing someone else's soul. That's why it's evil. That's why all that enemy of death stuff was wrong. It turned out to cause a lot of death instead of reversing it.
I guess so. Cole carried Soul and Void, preliminary theory, over to the table where Gwenda had already joined Tamara and Jasper. They were chattering about automatones, Tamara and Jasper telling Gwenda about the battle at Alistair's old car lot, especially Havoc's heroics.
Do you remember? Cole thought.
But Aaron had gone silent in his mind.
It wasn't fair.
He felt bad about hurting Aaron's feelings, but it was impossible not to think stupid, awful stuff. Horrible things floated to the surface of his mind all the time, and he couldn't stop them from coming. In the past, he'd barely restrained himself from saying the worst of his thoughts out loud. How was he supposed to restrain himself from thinking them? And then Aaron got to go off to hide in the back of his head and not reveal anything. Maybe Aaron's thoughts were even worse than Cole's. But Cole would never know. From the table, laden with books, he heard Gwenda speak.
So Cole dragged you to this enormous car graveyard looking for his father, and then an elemental attacked you, and Cole still didn't tell you that he was the enemy of death?
I think it was hard to say out loud,
Jasper said, surprising Cole.
He probably wasn't even sure we'd believe him. I wouldn't have. Of course, I would have pretended to at the time, because I was kidnapped, and you should never tell your kidnapper that he's a crazy person.
You get kidnapped a lot,
Gwenda said, gloriously unsympathetic.
I do, now that you mention it, said Jasper. Why am I defending Cole again? He's the reason I am always getting kidnapped.
Because you're super good friends?
Gwenda said, sounding confused.
You're his sidekick. Well, one of his sidekicks.
That's true, said Tamara. Havoc is really his main sidekick.
No, 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 no,
Jasper said, clearly appalled.
You can't really have thought of me that way. I am his rival. Cole and I are always going head-to-head, toe-to-toe, in contests of war and love, and I win as often as I lose. I am his rival.
If you say so,
Gwenda said. Cole, despite everything else, had to smile. Gwenda checked her watch.
We have to go meet with Master Rufus, she said, sounding relieved, which is fine because this is kind of boring. I can't believe we're here because a lizard dropped a hint.
Warren's been right before, said Cole, not sure if he was defending Warren or himself. We'll take these books back to the rooms and keep going through them until we find something.
Whatever floats your boat, said Gwenda.
She made a clicking noise at Jasper, who looked incredulous.
Come on!
Time's a-wasting.
People click at dogs,
Jasper protested, following Gwenda from the room.
You can't click at me.
Click,
Gwenda said cheerfully.
Click, click.
Jasper's protests were muffled as he and Gwenda moved out of earshot. Shaking her head, Tamara divided up the book burden between herself and Cole.
Maybe we are being paranoid,
she said as they left the library.
Maybe Warren really didn't mean anything.
You can hardly blame us for being paranoid after everything we've been through, said Cole. He was wishing Aaron would come into his head again and tell him the right thing to say to Tamara, who looked tired and worried. But Aaron remained stubbornly absent. Tamara ducked her head.
I guess not.
What was she thinking? Cole wanted to bang his head on a wall, but they'd reached their rooms and Tamara was letting them in with her wristband. They dumped their books on the table. Cole was about to suggest that they head to the gallery for a snack when Tamara picked up Soul and Void and glanced at the back.
The opposite of chaos,
she read in a low voice,
is the human soul.
She swallowed hard.
Cole, I'm sorry. Not that I told you not to bring back Aaron, but that I didn't try harder to understand why you felt like you needed to. Everyone was telling you that you were responsible for his death. Everyone was treating you like it was your fault. You must have felt like the only way to fix things was to bring him back.
Cole knew it was probably a bad idea, to be honest. But he didn't know what else to do, or what else to say. I didn't want Aaron back so I'd feel better, he said. I mean, yeah, I felt guilty. But I was scared to do it, too. I'm always scared of what might happen if I'm not always watching myself, checking to make sure I don't go full evil. But Aaron was my friend, and he had faith in me, and I didn't want him to be dead. That was all. Tamara's eyes shone, as though she was holding back the edge of tears.
And I went off and left you, she said. You must have thought I had no faith in you at all. I knew I was wrong the minute I got back to the Magisterium. I'd been thinking that the mages would save us all, the assembly would help, that they were grown-ups and we were kids. But they're just flawed people. They can't fix everything.
No one can fix everything, said Cole. Tamara looked so sad. He wanted desperately to hug her, but would she want that? It's not your fault you trusted them.
I trust you, she said. You're my friend, Cole, and
I don't want to just be your friend, he said. She looked at him, wide-eyed, like she couldn't believe he said that. Cole could feel his heart pounding through his whole body. He wasn't sure he believed he'd said it either. I'm sorry, he said, but it's the truth. I like you, Tamara. In fact, She rose up on her tiptoes and kissed him. It felt like lightning had zapped Cole's whole body. The first time they'd ever kissed, he'd been too stunned to really respond, but this time, he wrapped his arms around her, just like he'd wanted to before. And Tamara put her arms around him. And that was amazing. And she stroked his cheek gently while he kissed her. And that was even more amazing. She smelled like rose water. And he was pretty sure this was the best kiss anyone in history had ever had and would definitely have gotten an Olympic 10 in kissing if the Olympics graded this kind of thing.
Ugh! I am still in here!
Came the shout in Cole's head, causing Cole to pull away from Tamara. It was Aaron, apparently horrified out of his sulk by all the kissing,
Call?
Tamara asked, confused. She was looking at him with a kind of dreamy half-smile on her face that made him just want to kiss her again, but she'd probably be really angry when she found out about Aaron. Said Cole, casting about for something, some reason to stop that would mean they could start up again later. I think we're moving too fast. I think we need to... There, Cole's thoughts deserted him.
Stop!
Aaron said. Stop! Cole echoed. Tamara blinked at him, looking hurt.
Okay,
she said in a small voice.
But I thought this was what you wanted.
Oh, I do. Cole said, maybe a little bit too eagerly. I really, really do. It's only that I think we should, take a break to make sure you're sure, Aaron said.
Cole repeated the words. They sounded good, thoughtful, mature.
Tamara was looking at him weirdly again, though.
We want to make sure we are building on a foundation of trust,
Aaron said.
Cole said that, too, trying to invest the words with conviction, trying to be the person who believed them.
Tamara folded her arms across her chest and looked at him with narrowed eyes.
You sound like Aaron,
she told him.
That's a good thing, right?
Cole asked.
It's something,
she said, which did not sound entirely like agreement.
I guess we both miss him in our own way.
She put her hand on his cheek, warm against his skin.
Good night, Cole.
And with that, she went off to her room, leaving Cole to go to his own and throw himself onto the little bed. Havoc jumped up, circling around before sitting directly on Cole's feet, but Cole couldn't even summon up the energy to care. Things had been going so well with Tamara that he'd almost forgotten that he had another secret. She'd already put up with so much. And would she even believe him?
Cole, Aaron said. We have to talk about something.
I know what you're going to say,
Cole told him, looking up at the shimmering mica ceiling above him, remembering how great it had been for that one moment when they were together and everything else hadn't mattered.
Then I should just trust her.
And I know I should. I should tell her. But I just want things to be normal.
That's not it.
I found something in your head. Something weird.
Something in his head?
Cole closed his eyes. A huge weariness had come over him. Whatever it was, Aaron knew, he didn't want to hear about it. Not now, he said.
Just not now.
Chapter 6
Cole dreamed. And in his dream, he was a grown-up mage in a city he didn't recognize. He lifted his hands and black lightning, chaos lightning, sparked between them. He felt a sense of surety and overwhelming power. It reminded him of the feeling he'd had when chaos was coursing through his body, except now he knew how to channel it. This must have been what it felt like to be Constantine Madden. The black fire shot from his fingers. It was as if he were Zeus. He could burn the whole world, and it would be easy. With movements of his fingers, he guided the destructive fire.
striking down other mages as they tried to run. Fire burst from the roofs of buildings. A stone clock tower was burning. He had no counterweight, but it didn't matter. Nothing mattered. Nothing mattered but power. Cole sat up, gasping. His hair was plastered to his forehead with sweat. It took him several long moments to remember who he was and where he was, in his own bed, in the magisterium. He kicked the covers away, hoping the shock of cold air would wake him up and push him further from the dream. It had been horrible, in a wonderful sort of way. "Are you all right?" Aaron sounded worried. "I think so," Call said. "I mean, yeah. It was a nightmare, is all." "It was Constantine," Aaron said. "His memories. It had to have been." "I've had weird dreams before," Call said. "They don't necessarily mean anything." "I'm sorry about before," Aaron said. "Let me tell you what I found, okay? Then we can maybe figure out how to handle kissing while I'm still here." Cole sighed. "Probably by just not doing it," he said glumly. At least in his bedroom he could talk out loud to Aaron without anyone thinking he'd lost his mind. "Okay. Shoot." "There's something locked up in your head," Aaron said. "I don't know how to describe it, but being in here is like being in a big space with windows. I can look out of them, and I'm looking out of your eyes. There are currents, emotions that move past me, and your thoughts are like words in my mind. But when we weren't talking before, it was like I bumped up against a locked door in the middle of the room. There's something closed away inside it." "Like a repressed memory?" Call said, puzzled. "I think it's Constantine's memories," said Aaron. "I think someone shut them away in here so you wouldn't have access to them." "Why would anyone do that?" "I don't know." Aaron sounded frustrated. "Maybe when he jumped into your body because you were a baby, your mind couldn't handle all of the memories, so they got shut away."
It made a kind of sense. Or maybe they would have made me realize I was an adult, trapped in a baby's body. Maybe he thought that would make him go insane?
"I don't know. But I think we should open them." Cole was up and out of the bed, shaking his head, though he knew Aaron couldn't see him. "No, no." "Why not?"
"The whole time I was with Master Joseph, every time I was around Anastasia Tarquin, all they wanted was for me to remember being Constantine Madden, because they thought those memories would, I don't know, overwrite my own. What if the memories make me stop being Call?"
Aaron was quiet for a long moment. "I guess I figured they would just be memories and it would be like the way I am in your head. I'm still me, even if I hear your thoughts.
But Constantine's soul was my soul. Maybe they will feel like my memories. But even if they don't, what if they're really, really bad?" He was afraid, he realized, of more than just the possibility of turning into Constantine. He was afraid of facing all the terrible things that Constantine had really done. What if Cole remembered every ugly, awful thing? What if he had to remember the death of his own mother?
"I guess I didn't think about any of that," Aaron said. "But if you ever want to look at the memories, I'm here in your head too. I will do everything I can to make sure that you stay you. Okay?"
Cole felt like a coward,
Let me think about it. It was early, but he knew he wasn't going to be able to get back to sleep. Instead, he got up, got his towel and his change of clothes, and headed to the bathing room, Havoc padding along behind him. He washed up quickly while Havoc popped soap bubbles with his tongue, sneezing and then growling at the bubbles. After the bath, Cole headed back into his room and was startled by Jasper, shirtless, doing stretches in the common area.
"What are you doing?" Cole demanded. "Limbering up for the day ahead," Jasper said, as though Cole were the weird one. "Getting into the right mental place for magic."
"Ah," Cole said.
"Sure."
By the time he got back from walking Havoc, both of the girls were up, Gwenda with a purple silk cap over her twists, Tamara yawning as she took her toothpaste into the bathing area. The reality that Jasper and Gwenda were really Cole's new roommates, and in his apprentice group, was sinking in, and he still wasn't sure how he felt about it. On the plus side, at least they hadn't walked in on him and Tamara kissing. Cole had just put down some kibble for Havoc, when the door opened and Master Rufus came in.
"Today, apprentices, we're going to continue to learn about metal from both a scientific and magical perspective. Cole, you will be joining us after you meet with a member of the assembly."
"That doesn't sound good," Cole said.
"This is an informal meeting, and Mr. Rajavi has assured me that very little time will be taken away from your classes."
Master Rufus didn't seem particularly concerned, which was reassuring. And Cole knew Mr. Rajavi. Maybe it wouldn't be so bad.
"My dad's here?" Tamara asked.
"He wanted me to give you his regards," said Master Rufus. "He was sorry he couldn't see you, but there are rules against apprentices getting visitors."
Unless that apprentice was a Makar, who might also be an evil overlord, then you got a lot of visitors.
"Cole, Mr. Rajavi will be waiting for you in my office. I will accompany the rest of you to the refectory."
And with that, they were off, leaving Cole to eat some cereal and go to Master Rufus's office alone. Cole took the path that led alongside one of the Magisterium's many underground rivers. It glowed eerie blue in the light of the moss. On the way, he peered around, looking for Warren. He even called the little lizard's name a few times, his voice echoing through the caverns. He was sure he'd see Warren during the short boat trip, but by the time he got to the far bank, he decided Warren was avoiding him. When Cole reached Rufus's door, he tapped on it and heard Mr. Rajavi's voice echo from inside.
"Come in."
The office looked much as it always had. The same papers were tacked to the walls, covered in what Cole now recognized as alchemical equations. The big couch was gone, replaced by more bookshelves, and the old workstation had been replaced by one made of a gleaming, clear material. Quartz, Cole guessed. Tamara's father sat behind Rufus's roll-top desk.
"Oh, God," Cole thought. "Tamara's father. And he'd just kissed Tamara. Was that why Mr. Rajavi was here?"
"Don't be totally ridiculous," said Aaron. "Do you think he's psychic or something?"
Kimaya was grounded for making out with evil overlord Alex. Tamara had said so. Mr. Rajavi had a well-established policy of not liking his children making out with evil overlords. Cole slid into the chair opposite the desk, eyes wide. Mr. Rajavi gazed at him with an unsmiling expression. He wore an expensive-looking black suit and a thick gold watch on one wrist. His beard was perfectly trimmed.
"I need to say something about Tamara," Cole thought,
You really don't, said Aaron, sounding alarmed.
I have to reassure him, Cole protested.
Reassure him about what?
You did kiss Tamara. Just keep your mouth shut, Cole.
My intentions are honorable, Cole blurted. He wanted to say more, but Aaron had set up a loud, angry buzzing in his head like a giant bee.
Mr. Rajavi blinked. That's good, son. It's good to hear that despite having the soul of Constantine Madden, you want to live an honorable life.
Narrow escape, Aaron muttered. At least he'd stopped the bee noise. Cole shifted uncomfortably in his chair.
I'll cut to the chase,
Tamara's father said.
Your mother, Anastasia Tarquin, has been asking for you.
She's not my mother. A wave of anger passed over Cole, erasing his previous embarrassment. She was Constantine Madden's mother, and I am not him.
Mr. Rajavi smiled, thinly. I like your conviction, and I know my daughter thinks highly of you. Then again, I've started to be suspicious of those my daughters think highly of.
Maybe you should tell him you kissed Tamara, said Aaron. He's a jerk.
He was always like this, Cole said. You just never saw it because he wasn't like that to you.
Cole felt instantly bad for having thought that, but he didn't want to let the silence stretch out too long while he tried to explain stuff to Aaron.
If you mean Alex Strike, I'm glad he's dead too, Cole said bluntly, but I don't want to see Anastasia.
She's in the Panopticon, said Mr. Rajavi. Her sentencing was this afternoon. She's been condemned to death.
That shook Cole. He tried not to show it, but his hands tightened on the arms of his chair. Maybe he should agree to see her, but trying to imagine himself back in the Panopticon on the other side of the magical glass was awful. Besides, he didn't have anything to say to Anastasia. He couldn't help her, and he didn't want to keep pretending to be okay with her calling him Constantine.
He thought about the memories Aaron had found locked away in his head.
Maybe if he looked at those, he would have some of the feelings for her that she hoped he would. But that only made him more determined not to unlock those memories.
Do I have to go? Cole asked.
Of course not, Mr. Rajavi said.
He seemed relieved at the thought that Cole was really saying no. Maybe he didn't want to go to the Panopticon either.
If you change your mind, tell Master Rufus.
Cole stood up, assuming the meeting was over, only to have Mr. Rajavi stay where he was. After an awkward moment, Cole sat down again.
Is there something else?
An offer. You're graduating from the magisterium soon. Once you finish your gold year, you will be a mage in earnest. And a very powerful one.
A Makar.
I want you to go to the Collegium. I will make sure you get accepted into the best programs there. I will clear a path for you to be a very important mage, perhaps an assembly member yourself one day. But we want you to stop using chaos magic, except with the explicit permission of the assembly. We want you to be our Makar.
Cole was astonished. It wasn't like he was running around using chaos magic all the time, for fun. But this was the same Mr. Rajavi who'd gotten Aaron to perform tricks with chaos magic at one of his parties. How had that been okay, but this wasn't?
Maybe the assembly would give you permission to do chaos tricks at parties, too,
Aaron said with surprising cynicism.
How would you know?
Cole asked.
Mr. Rajavi's eyebrows went up. Cole supposed it didn't sound like the question of someone who was planning on being honest.
"Well," Mr. Rajavi said, "we would choose a new counterweight for you."
A new counterweight? Cole was surprised at the depths of his revulsion at the thought. Aaron was his best friend. That was why he'd been willing to be Aaron's counterweight, and why Aaron had been his.
"I'm still your best friend," Aaron said. "If you start thinking like I am dead, it's really going to freak me out."
"What if I don't agree?" Cole asked Mr. Rajavi.
"Let's just hope that you do," he said. A promise and a threat, all in one.
"I've got to think about it," Cole replied.
Mr. Rajavi stood and extended his hand to Cole, who got up to shake it. Cole realized again how much taller he'd grown. He was looking down at Mr. Rajavi's head.
"Think well," Mr. Rajavi said. "You've got a bright future ahead of you."
On Cole's stiff-legged walk back through the tunnels, he considered Anastasia and the Assembly's offer. He thought about Alistair, too, and his promise that once Gold Year was over, they could travel and establish themselves in a new place with new identities. Cole came to where the rest of his apprentice group was training. Tamara was shaping her metal into a shining circle, liquid and dazzling. Jasper was poking some gold nuggets, while Gwenda was attempting to coax a mushy puddle of bronze into a bracelet. Master Rufus was sitting on a rock, looking to be a bit in despair. If Cole went away with Alistair, he would never see any of them again. But if he accepted the Assembly's offer, he could see them whenever he wanted. They could all go to the Collegium together. He wouldn't do any more chaos magic. It wasn't like he wanted to do it anyway. Mr. Rajavi might not even ground Tamara for dating him.
"You're forgetting about one thing," Aaron said.
"What's that?"
Cole asked.
"Me."
Chapter 7.
At lunch, in the refectory, Gwenda and Tamara chatted animatedly. Jasper seemed sunk in gloom, gazing frequently over at the nearby table where Celia sat, surrounded by her other gold and silver year friends. Cole recognized some of them. A quiet boy with brown hair named Charlie, and a girl with a short black pixie cut whose name he thought was Jessie. But quite a few were total strangers to him. Maybe because he'd spent so much time away from the Magisterium, he realized, and maybe because even when he'd been there, he'd been too wrapped up in his comfortable group of three to notice much. Sometimes Jasper would wave at Celia. She would wave back graciously, ignoring everyone else at the table. Tamara just rolled her eyes. They were all laughing and joking around, except Cole, who stayed quiet. He could sense Aaron's tension. Aaron had always loved these kinds of big groups, flourishing on all the humor and affection.
"It's like being a ghost," Aaron said now. "I can see everything, but I can't do anything or say anything."
"What is going on with you, Jasper?" Gwenda said finally, after he'd exchanged another weird wave with Celia. "Are you guys together or not?"
"It's complicated," said Jasper.
"Celia wants me to renounce Cole and lodge a protest about being put into Master Rufus's apprentice group."
"That's ridiculous," said Kai. "Half the school would kill to be Rufus's student."
"Well, he does seem to like killers,"
called Celia, who had clearly overheard and was glaring. They all dropped their voices.
"Well, you obviously can't do that,"
whispered Gwenda.
No, of course not, said Jasper.
Cole's your friend, said Rafe.
It's not that,
Jasper protested.
It's about not giving in. De Winter doesn't do what he's told. De Winter is independent.
Cole thought about how Jasper's father wasn't independent at all. He was locked away in the Panopticon, besmirching the De Winter name. Jasper liked to complain.
A lot.
About little stuff. But never about his dad's situation.
It must weigh on him, though.
Celia can't keep being so ridiculous, said Tamara. It's unbelievable she's getting any support.
I'd say about half the school feels like she does, said Kai in a low voice.
There are a lot of people who don't like or trust Cole, and some of them think he's basically just the enemy of death in a Gold Year uniform.
What about the people who actually like me? Said Cole, feeling sick.
They're all at this table, said Gwenda.
That's not true, Tamara protested. There are people who like you, Cole, and Havoc likes you, and Warren.
Warren doesn't like anyone, said Cole, pushing his plate away.
He thought about his dream of the Collegium.
Wouldn't it just be more of this?
Kai suddenly stood up. His brown eyes met Cole's, and he shook his head sadly.
I'm sorry, he said,
and crossed the room to sit down at Celia's table. They all stared after him, stunned. Rafe broke the silence.
Charlie's his boyfriend, and he's completely on Celia's side, he said.
You have to understand, it's been really hard on Kai. Jasper looked grim.
Battle lines are being drawn, he said.
And for once, he wasn't kidding around. Cole almost imagined he could see a thin, glowing line separating their table from Celia's. Dragging a fork through his lichen, Cole knew that he was going to have to do something. He just wished he knew what. After lunch, exercises were outside in the woods and included Gold Years and Iron Years. They were to accompany the younger kids as they explored the area around the Magisterium and tried out some newly learned magic.
Don't let them wander off,
Master Rufus said.
This will be good for all of you, to take responsibility for younger mages, to help them, and also to realize how far you've come in your own studies.
None of them are going to want to partner with me, Cole said to Tamara, then was a little ashamed.
His friends already had to deal with the hostility that people they cared about felt toward Cole. He didn't have to complain on top of it. Tamara patted him reassuringly on the shoulder.
Maybe there's a tiny evil one.
He glowered at her, and she smiled cheerfully back at him. That's the spirit. Your evil little fan will like that. He laughed, despite himself. Meanwhile, Jasper was puffing himself up with the thought that someone was going to be impressed with him.
I have a lot of wisdom to pass on, he was saying to Gwenda. The important thing is that I find an apprentice worthy of me.
I really think none of them deserve you. Gwenda told him, and he nodded thoughtfully.
You're so right.
Oh, she said, I know I am.
Once they were through the mission gate, Cole couldn't help noticing that the woods were strangely quiet. No bird calls came from the trees. He couldn't even hear crickets. He looked toward the others. Tamara and Master Rufus had paused. Too. The silence was truly eerie. Woods were never really quiet. There was always bird song or the sound of distant animals in the underbrush. But there was nothing. Cole was about to say something to Master Rufus when the magisterium gates opened again, and more apprentices filed out with their masters. Suddenly, it was harder to hear the silence of the woods over the human chatter.
"We've already paired you up,"
Master Rockmaple said, loudly enough that the apprentices began to quiet down.
"I will call out the name of a gold year, and then the iron year they are to be paired with."
A breeze blew through the trees, and in the moment after Master Rockmaple finished speaking, Cole was unnerved again to hear the whistle of wind through branches. And nothing more. No animal sounds. But there was the sound of something else. It sounded to Cole like something familiar.
"Rockmaple," Master Rufus said, "I think we should go back inside and postpone this exercise for another—"
Then Cole remembered. It was the sound he had heard when he and his father had gone to Niagara Falls once, an enormously loud, rushing noise, as if the air were splintering. A buzz rose among the apprentices, but there was no time to do anything. Before Master Rufus could even finish his sentence, high over the trees an elemental appeared. Cole heard Tamara gasp,
"A dragon!"
The dragon was massive, shiny black and sinuous, with small, membranous wings and enormous fang-lined jaws. Its eyes were a brilliant red. A human rider sat on its back, one in a long cloak that was whipped by the wind. Cole reached for Tamara. She grabbed his hand and held it. He could feel Aaron inside his head, flinching in disbelief and horror. Impossibly, the rider was Alex. Changed, but still recognizable, even though a nimbus of darkness surrounded his head. It was as if someone had cut the light out of the sky surrounding him. His eyes were enormous, black holes that shimmered, as though full of stars. Apprentices screamed. People started running back toward the magisterium. Not all of them recognized Alex, but they definitely recognized bad news when they saw it. Cole and Tamara stood their ground, though Master Rufus had moved to block them from Alex's direct view.
"He's dead."
Aaron sounded stunned.
"He's got to be dead. He was sucked into chaos."
The dragon opened its enormous jaws, and out came black fire. It seared across the tops of the surrounding trees, setting them aflame. They burned without light, without heat. Cole remembered his dream. The black flame spreading from his hands. The dragon was breathing pure chaos fire.
"Quickly! Everyone inside!"
Master Rufus shouted. He gestured for the students to get back. "Tamara! Cole! Get out of here!" The masters were running, circling the students in order to herd them back to the magisterium gates. Iron years were running, almost tripping over one another in their eagerness to get back toward the gates.
"Wait!"
shouted one of the masters.
"Stay close!"
But it was too late. The dragon swooped down, Alex clinging to its back, and caught two iron years. One of them was Axel, the little kid who'd been curious about Cole when he'd first arrived at the magisterium. He looked terrified, but he wasn't crying. He looked like he was trying to bite the chaos dragon's claws. Next to him was an iron year girl, screaming as she tried to kick her way free, but the dragon held fast, swooping up into the sky with the iron years gripped tightly in its claws. Astride the dragon, grinning now, Alex shouted, his voice booming across the forest.
"Stop! All masters of the magisterium, stop where you are! I am Alexander Strike, the first ever devourer of chaos,
and I will destroy you all unless you follow my commands.
The Devoured of Chaos. Call looked over at Master Rufus, but Master Rufus was intent on staring at Alex. He looked enraged.